This is Learning Innovation, the Teaching and Learning Podcast, also known as Little Pod. We are created by Lethbridge College's Center for Teaching, Learning, and Innovation, located in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada, on the traditional lands of the Blackfoot Confederacy, in the spirit of equity, diversity, and inclusion, and Niitsitapi Simstan, or Real Thinking. We play host to a spectrum of guests from the teaching and learning community. As we highlight and explore innovation in education, we hope to kindle warm conversations, expand perspectives, and foster lasting partnerships today, tomorrow, and beyond. The future of learning starts now. Okay, and welcome to episode number 57 of The Little Pod. Today we're talking with John Dirksen, Chair of the Aquaculture Center of Excellence, and Dr. Nick Savadoff, Senior Research Scientist at the Aquaculture Center of Excellence here at Lethbridge College. John and Nick will share about Lethbridge College's unique zero-waste aquaculture facility, along with their applied research and the micro-credentials they've developed to support professional development and accurate knowledge in the industry. Welcome, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It's great.
Hello.
So I was lucky enough to recently tour your aquaponics facility, and it's such an amazing operation. I just loved it. Before we jump into that, can you talk a little bit about how you guys met and your backgrounds? Maybe John, would you like to go first?
Sure. My background is in fisheries and aquaculture. That's where my education was in. I came to the college in 1997, and part of that was because the aquaculture center was already being planned to be built. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know about that. So that got me here. That was one of the big features for bringing me here as well. And then once the center was built, I was always involved with it from the conception. And I met Nick, and he was up in Brooks working for the government at the time. He can give you more details on that. But we started doing, I'd met Nick a couple times. People had mentioned Nick. And once you meet Nick, you remember him. But we started doing a joint aquaponics project in 2003. And so since then, we've stayed going on with aquaponics, and so has Nick when he was with the government. But that was the first joint project we started on. And then we collaborated for over several projects throughout. And then we brought Nick here, I think, in 2015? 15. Yeah. So.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you, John. And how about for you, Nick?
My background is plant physiology. So when I met John a very long time ago, it was a good match because John had knowledge about fish. I had knowledge about plants. To be honest with you, I was a bit skeptical about aquaponics in the beginning. I was doing hydroponics 30 plus years. And when John told me fish providing nutrients for plants, I said, how you can replace human intelligence designing different nutrient formulations for plants with fish when fish controls basically plant nutrients instead of humans? Over years, I got convinced that aquaponics works, and it doesn't just work. Works. It also works very efficiently and very sustainably. And the amazing thing about aquaponics that it's the only existing technology in the world which produce food without producing any waste.
For our listeners, I've seen the aquaponics facility, and it's just absolutely incredible. And I didn't know this fact as well that you mentioned, that it has zero waste. So, John, can you give audio tour of the aquaculture facility?
Yeah, sure. Actually, we're working with our VR department to, Nick and I last week sat in on a virtual reality. So hopefully we'll have that up soon. If it's in our wishes, it'll be up there pretty quick. But so then people can virtually tour through our center if they're, you know, from a distance. But yeah, so our center, whether you're a fish person or whether you're into aquaponics, when you walk in, it looks like a fish facility. Not efficient use of space from a commercial standpoint, but research is a big part of what we do. And so, but if you look closer, there's definitely any fish person's going to look around and say, well, what's that? And what's that do? So I love our job because basically we're researching areas in aquaponics, in aquaculture. And based on the results of those research, we start incorporating or testing those out at our scale, commercial scale. And, you know, clarifying, working out the tweaks and the bugs, and then incorporating it. And so there's a lot, like our mandate, like Nick says, is no waste, this no waste thing. For aquaponics, we kept doing aquaponics because it improved our circulation. So typically a RAS or recirculation aquaculture system will have some water discharge because nutrients will build up in that system. As soon as you add plants into the mix, then the plants are taking up those nutrients. And so you can effectively be 100% recirculating. Just you use that water over and over again. And so once you have that, then there's also the solids handling, not letting the solids that the fish are putting in the water get to the plants. And if you do that efficiently as well, you can actually take those solids. And if there's an abundance of them, you can actually take those out. And with some of our technology, we have no waste from solid-wise either. So there's no water waste. There is no solid manure or fish waste. I think I'm going off. I get tied up in, okay, this is great. But you wanted a tour of the facility. Okay, so that you'll see these components in the facility. You'll see tanks of fish and nothing different than you see in another recirculation aquaculture system. And most people that'll walk in, well, I thought you're all about aquaponics. They won't see the plants, at least not many of the plants. A lot of our plants are connected to our aquaculture facility underground so that we can take that water, pipe it underground to our greenhouse where we have over 500 plants. And Nick was saying today, we're producing about 2,000 long English cucumbers a week, John. We have quite a bit of success with those cucumbers right now. And so, yeah, we have a intensive greenhouse where we're producing the plants that are taking the nutrients from our fish and cleaning up the water for our fish. So, and both elements are quite unique and both at a commercial scale because we want this technology to go out there and be applied and used.
Yeah, because this supports industry.
Industry, yeah, that's right.
And Nick, did you want to add anything to that description?
Oh, yeah. The important thing about the aquaponics that some components you can see, like John said, for example, fish tanks or some water treatment like drum filters or oxygenator and other components which are typical for recirculating aquaculture system, but plants and greenhouse, but some things you cannot see. Nevertheless, they are very, very important. They're, as a matter of fact, they are crucial for efficient functioning of aquaponics. Aquaponics in general is recirculating system when fish provides nutrition for plants and plants work as biofilters, cleaning the water and the water goes to fish. But in fact, it's quite complex process with microorganisms playing a crucial, I would say, critical role, not just converting, organic fish waste into available plant nutrients, but also protecting plants and fish from diseases, for example, or stimulating root growth and providing plants more efficient machinery to uptake nutrients and to grow. We call it synergy. When their system benefits and generates higher output from having different parts than those parts would generate separately. Aquaponics, it's about synergy. Aquaponics is about interaction between all three components: plants, fish, and microorganisms.
That's great. Thank you for mentioning that, because I hadn't thought about what you don't see. You know, you're so overwhelmed when you walk in there to see the fish and then the plants. And so that's really interesting to learn more about the parts that you don't see. And you mentioned the biofilter. Can you both speak a little bit about the biofilter and what it does?
If you've ever run an aquarium, even, the biofilter is crucial. It's called bio because it's actually living. And like Nick was talking about the bacteria, the biofilter's basically main function is nitrification. So allowing that surface area in the biofilter, which usually you want a large surface area, to get colonized by these nitrifying bacteria. And the nitrifying bacteria main role is to take the ammonia that the fish waste is mostly composed of, that fish waste, that ammonia is being put into the water, and that's toxic to fish. If you allow that to build up without a biofilter, that will build up and kill your fish. So basically the biofilter, the nitrifying bacteria, break that ammonia down and convert it into nitrite and then further into nitrate. Nitrate, I view that, I tell people, it's kind of like sugar. You wouldn't think of it as toxin, but if that's all you ate, it would be. Nitrate can build up in an aquaculture system and become toxic. And that's why if you don't have plants in the mix, you have to discharge some water and lower those nitrates again, bring in fresh water. With aquaponics, with plants in the mix, that basically the plants are taking up those nitrates as a nitrogen source. So they're getting rid of those nitrates for you. So you can be 100%. But that biofilter is huge, and a lot of people have made mistakes with it, and you can kill your fish quite easily. And Nick, you have anything to, you have more to add on that?
Of course, yeah.
What I'd like to add to what John just said, that nitrate is actually a very valuable commodity for plants. In nature, plants are actively competing to each other to get nitrate from environment, because it's not that easily available. And the plants which are more efficient in taking this nitrate, they will grow faster than plants which don't have the same capacity. So aquaponics mimics those natural ecosystems. And the role of the plants is very clear, just as John said. Plants take nitrate very actively, and they stop nitrate from building up in the system. That's why you can basically run the same system indefinitely. I would like to give you an example. About 20 years ago, I designed and built 9 systems, aquaponics modules, for my research with the University of Alberta with Dr. Andy Keddy. And since then, we never replaced water in those systems for 20 years. We have been recirculating the same water. The only water we needed to add, obviously, the one which was lost due to evaporation and transpiration. But the same water has been recirculating for 20 years without any discharge. To my best knowledge, it's probably the most water use efficient system existing. Another thing I would like to also mention, plants have a very, very efficient scavenging mechanism to take all forms of nitrogen, not just nitrate, but also nitrite and ammonium. Ammonium is actually food for plants. It's toxic for fish, but it's food for plants. Still, nitrification is important for plants too, because their level of tolerance is lower to ammonium compared to nitrate. So you can grow plants on much higher level of nitrate than ammonium, but they absorb ammonium faster, which makes it an ideal biofilter, right? That's why aquaponics is actually was the idea of aquaponics was suggested by field biologists for the reason John just mentioned, to help maintain nitrate, to remove nitrate. What they didn't expect that those plants become revenue generator. And as a matter of fact, in aquaponics, 80% of revenue is generated by plants and only 20% is generated by fish. So some aquaponic growers, they just keep fish as a source of nutrients.
That's really amazing. And I find it completely fascinating too, that you could have the same water in a system for 20 years. That, especially now, you know, when we may be going into a drought, it seems like a very appealing prospect to have an industry that doesn't need any more water.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. And our role is to develop the technologies which can help us use water more efficiently. And aquaponics is one of those.
It's a little bit misleading too, because when someone takes a look at aquaponics, they're like, there's water all over the place. What do you mean there's less water use here? But you just got to remember it's used over and over and over.
Yeah, it just recirculates all the time. I recall when I had the tour, there was something unique about the biofilter that you have here. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I'll let Nick speak to that because, it's pretty unique.
What's also was quite unexpected that when we started working with a commercial prototype of aquaponics, we started running into some problems. For example, we observed that drum filter, which is used to separate solids from liquid, is not efficient enough system in order to prevent finer solids getting into plant bed and accumulate there, forming sludge, which becomes anaerobic and toxic. So I suggested to use charcoal in order to capture those fines. And over time, we developed this system into a very efficient carbon-based microfiltration system, which does both things. It captures finer particles which escape drum filter, but also they house beneficial microorganisms which mineralize those captured fines, and also nitrifying bacteria which convert toxic ammonium into nitrite and nitrate. So their carbon filter, we call it trickling carbon filter, performs a dual role as a mechanical filter for what we call water polishing in order to prevent organic solids going to plant beds, but also as a biofilter, which efficiently oxidizes, to be more exact, ammonium into nitrate. What's really remarkable about this filter, that it's self-regenerating. The thing is, because it's biologically active, it self-regenerates. The captured fines are converted into minerals, and you can use this carbon filter indefinitely, just as I mentioned aquaponics. So carbon-based biofilter, not to be confused with activated carbon filter, which is based on different principles and has to be replaced. But trickling biofilter based on carbon doesn't have to be replaced. It's incredibly stable, and bacteria removing captured solid particles, make it again ready to take new ones.
And when people come and do tours, they're like, what's that? And we kind of explain that to them. And they say, okay, well, how often do you have to replace that? Never. Well, how often do you have to backwash that? Never. Like, if you plan it right, you don't, it just stays. It's like, and Nick had people saying to him, well, what about the carbon? That gets eaten away. He's read that, right? And people's, that eats away at the carbon. You have to play. No, it doesn't. Nothing's eating at the carbon. And really, if we look at it too, if this catches on, which I think we think it is going to be, because it has such a, it's more, we've had it in there for 4 years now. And our water quality before, we couldn't see to the bottom of our tanks because of these fines that Nick was talking about. Didn't mean that our drum filter wasn't working. It just, there's still some fine particulate matter that accumulates in the system, and that could negatively impact your aquaponic system. This is just a technology that Nick was working with in the government that we used here and perfected here, and the water quality for the fish is better, and the water quality for our plant and for the aquaponics part is better as well. So,
what an amazing advancement. You know, it already was a great system, but it sounds like this has even made it that much better.
Mm-hmm. But what's important is to properly calculate the size of carbon-based biofilter. Because if you make it too small, it will be plugged up by organic material and becomes anaerobic. If it's too big, you are wasting your space, you are wasting your resources. That's why John and I, we worked on the development of the system for our industry clients. We have conducted many trials in order to determine optimal flow rate and maximum load you can use for your carbon-based filter. But that's our role. That's why we're doing this research, in order to minimize the risks of future users.
Yeah, so that's I guess that's part of the research that's going on, is to determine the best way to make that work.
Exactly.
And so when one thinks of research, they typically think of, you know, they may think of universities, not necessarily colleges, but as we know, colleges do conduct research, and Lethbridge College is increasingly becoming known for its high quality research. And over the seasons of this podcast, we've explored some of the college's research projects. In episode 27, we looked at an exploration of immersive technology inspiring lifelong movement. And in episode 33, we examined immersive storytelling, the Battle of Belly River. So there's a lot of research going on at the college. But research at a college is a little bit different from maybe what goes on at a university, because it is applied, which means it's seeking to solve practical problems or address specific needs in society. So I'd love to talk more about the research that you're doing, the applied research, and that connection to industry.
That's, you know, I think that that gets me going too, because there's a direct application. Everything we do, all the research projects we take on, we have clients. They want to see the answers. It's not just for the sake of knowledge, better knowledge. We understand how this works better, but there's a direct application that they're going to take this. And we just started a 3-year lighting project, and it's to look at the efficiencies of different types of lights that are used in greenhouse, supplemental lighting. And we have a postdoc who we've hired for those 3 years. And I think this was his first crack at really applied research. And it's just, he loves it. He's just like, this is fantastic. I totally see the application of this. And it's direct, right? It's not just like, we know how to make a better light and that's great for the manufacturer. No, this is everything we're doing. Our mandate for the center is to reduce our footprint. How can we produce food, whether it's fish, whether it's plants, and reduce our footprint doing it? So, you know, if you look at it that, oh yeah, that's a waste product, we don't look at it that way. How can we eliminate that waste, or that waste? Like we always say to each other, You know, the environment doesn't have waste, you know, and we kind of try to make our facility run that way as well. So if it's a waste product right now, we've got to correct that, because that's money to a commercial producer. We've relied too long for our food production for nature to take care of the waste, and it's not sustainable. So in order to be sustainable, we have to look at that. And anyway, our research is applied directly to the clients that we have and that see our technology, and we bring more in saying, hey, I want that. I see a use for that in mine. And so that's how we build clientele, by testing it in our own center. So we might do it on a smaller scale first and saying, that was neat. And then we'll always try to apply it to our facilities. And
like John said, we're running a very industry-focused research. I'm formerly academic scientist too. And for me, it was a pretty steep learning curve, because most part of my research career I spent in doing research in different universities across the globe. But when I became a lead of a greenhouse research program in Alberta, very long time ago, in the beginning of 2000s, all of a sudden I realized that I'm getting more satisfaction from my work helping people when I see that the results of my research, they are helping people and they really appreciate it. And I kind of was excited by that fact. And although I believe that applied research requires also deep knowledge in basic science too, but the satisfaction you are getting is, to me, is higher. And one of the examples is a light project. Why it's so important? Because supplemental light often is a critical factor for greenhouse growers to survive economically. The industry is highly competitive, and the project profit margins are pretty narrow. Lightest installation requires lots of money, but the reward is also very high. So they're one of the main purposes of light project is to determine what light would be the most efficient from economics point of view, not just from point of view of production, but also from a point of generating revenue per square foot of greenhouse space. And that's very important for the industry. We've seen very dramatic rise in LED market. LEDs, they are much more durable, they're much more energy efficient, but unfortunately, their market niche for LED, such as greenhouse, resulted to inflated prices for horticultural, or what they call grow LED. What we are trying to do is to compare expensive horticultural LED lights with more conventional HPS, or high-pressure sodium, and industrial LED lights, such as high-base. The prices for high-base dropped down very significantly. And we were thinking that the growers can benefit from a decreased cost of industrial LED lights. We call them high base. And one of their purposes of this light experiment is to estimate their gain and yield from different sources of lights using HPS as a control and horticultural LEDs and industrial LEDs, and estimate if this inflated price of horticultural LEDs pays off. Now, the thing is that in any event, LEDs are going to replace more conventional lights. The reason is that the power is getting more expensive and we need more efficient source of light for plant production. But we can make the process easier for growers and more economical doing this research.
So that will help them determine how much light and the type of light.
And what type of light. Yeah, exactly. If we find that they can reach their goals using cheaper industrial light, that will be a huge break for them. Again, as this is research. I cannot tell you in advance what the result is going to be. But if the gain is too little, I would say, when you use very expensive horticultural LED lights compared to industrial LED lights, it may not be economically efficient even if you are getting higher yields, right? Because you have to spend so much more to buy those lights. And that's the difference between, let's say, basic research, where usually you don't take into consideration economics factor and applied research, when you look not just for the yield, but also economic output.
I can really understand why industry would be very interested in learning the results of this project. That's wonderful.
Especially since some of the lights are 12 times more costly.
So it's quite a difference.
So it's quite a difference. And then you need to equip 4 or 5 acres of greenhouses. You're talking even
millions.
If it's millions of dollars, but even if 12 times, that's huge.
Yeah. Imagine that lights can be more expensive than greenhouse itself.
Is there another favorite project as well that you would like to mention?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to mention the canola one. We just got it.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would also talk about our fed batch bioreactor too.
Oh,
so
okay.
You talk about canola. I will talk about
is that okay?
Yeah,
that? Okay.
I'm really curious about the canola because we see it in the fields around us. But
yeah, and so it is. Research that it's in good placement. We're in a big agriculture area. Basically what it is, there's, I think for the last 2 decades at least, there's been a lot of research gone into fish feed, making it more efficient. Now, one big component of fish feed is you have to have fish protein, fish meal in the fish food to feed fish. And the biggest thing was like, oh, you need to have fish in your diet because you get the omega-3s and all that. And it's like, well, now you can get omega-3s in eggs because now the chicken producers queuing in on that saying, well, I'm going to now put fish feed in the chicken diet. And now my hens are producing omega-3 eggs. And that, so there's a greater demand for that fish meal. And so if you can supplement some of that fish meal with another type of protein that's less expensive, that's going to go far. And a lot of research has gone into looking at that. So in this project that we have through the Canola Council, that basically we haven't started the research yet, but we just got it, is that we're going to supplement some of that fish meal out of the diet of fish and put in canola meal. That research has been done. So it's like, okay, why are you doing it again? Because what we're doing is we're looking at how it impacts aquaponics. So if I now play around with the fish food, how does that relay out? Where do the nutrients go? So are my plants going to be able to grow the same out of that kind of water when fish are fed a diet that's supplemented with canola meal? The research has been done on how the fish will grow. So we can supplement, I think from the research, it's about 20%. I can supplement out 20% of the fish meal and substitute it for canola meal. And beyond that, you start seeing a decline in fish growth. But what does that do now? What does the fecal matter, what does that look like? Because that'll break down and release nutrients, or the nutrients that come out of the fish, how is it going to impact the plants? And so we want to look at that impact on the aquaponics end of things. And that hasn't been done.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. And I can imagine as well, industry you know, that has an impact too, because they've got to feed the fish.
And so if I can reduce my cost of fish feed, yet, and I know it's not going to impact my plant production or my fish production, I've won, right? That's a win.
Yeah. And what's important is that we will be testing this in aquaponics, not just in aquaculture, but also in aquaponics. Why it's important? Because aquaponics is an ecosystem where each component depends on each other. And like John mentioned, what changes it makes in the system if we replace, let's say, 20% of fish meal with canola meal? And what may happen that we will get more balanced nutrition for plants? Because canola meal is the plant meal, right? And it contains all nutrients necessary for plant growth. So introducing canola meal into fish feed rations will definitely benefit the plants. And that's what we're going to study. If our hypothesis is true, it will benefit both. Actually, even three areas, I would say. It will benefit fish growers, definitely, because fish feed will be less expensive. Now, fish feed cost comprises up to 50% of all expenses, and higher, up to 60% in aquaculture. It will benefit their greenhouse plants because they will get more balanced nutrition, and will also benefit canola producers too. So it's win-win.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. That's incredible. And you were going to mention a project as well that you're working on. Is it?
Yeah, we talked about, and John mentioned about aerobic bioreactors, which mineralize solids, fish solids. And we've done these studies for over, I would say, almost two decades. And I developed different types of bioreactors. We call them batch bioreactor, where this material is loaded into bioreactor and is converted into soluble minerals. And I used also a fed batch. So in fed batch bioreactor, we supply fish waste continuously. And when we fill up this aerobic bioreactor, then the process stops and we decant mineralized solution, and the solids stay there for their second cycle, next cycle. What's important is that this fish operation is a continuous process. You cannot just stop it and wait when you mineralize all solids. Fish farm produces fish sludge continuously, and we need to utilize it continuously. That's why, in order to commercialize this technology, you need to find some solution, and this solution is fed batch bioreactor. For the last 2 years, the college invested internal funds in order to develop fully automated fed batch bioreactor. And we also worked on SOPs to make the technology this available for users. And right now we're working with several industry partners who expressed their interest to this technology. If you ask me, I think that's going to revolutionize the way we manage waste. Why? Because right now we rely on the technology which existed for 1,000 years, such as composting, for example, which is long process. It takes quite a bit of labor because you have to turn it over to provide oxygen. but it also allows some nutrients to escape, so you have nutrient loss. Aerobic bioreactor technology is the only technology existing which can utilize all nutrients with 100% efficiency. You don't lose those nutrients for leaching, for gas loss, which is common for, would say, composting process. Many farmers still spread fresh manure in the field, which is not really an environmentally friendly technology because it also helps E. coli to spread and disperse in space, right? So this technology removes all endogenous microflora. And if, for example, you want to digest chicken manure, the all E. coli will not survive the process. So I think that aquaponics, for the first time developing this aerobic bioreactor technology, is actually paved the way for the whole agriculture, and not just agriculture, but also a food processing industry, to utilize their organic waste and convert them to a fertilizer. And this is very important because modern agriculture had been relying on natural sources such as, for example, phosphate rock deposits or potassium rock deposits or fossil fuels to produce nitrogen. Now, the bad news is those deposits are not going to last forever. What we're going to do then? So we need to find a way to recycle those nutrients back. And using technologies like aquaponics and aerobic bioreactor can help do that.
That is really incredible. That's just absolutely amazing. And so exciting that that is happening here at Lethbridge College. It's really groundbreaking.
Well, I just want to add, because if someone's listening, it's like, oh, okay, so I can take my waste. And we actually laugh because we make the plans for some of these partners that have come to us that want this technology. We sit and work out the numbers and we're like, you understand that this guy's fish aren't even going to produce as much revenue as his waste will. His waste will generate more revenue than his fish will. And he was a fish producer. So that is like, hey, that's pretty cool. If we can set them up and saying, here, if you do this, you'll actually earn more than double if you do it this way. So
that is very cool.
Yeah,
and it will make fish farmers more economically sustainable.
That's
and
right.
That's mm-hmm. That's exactly our goal.
So it sounds like the industry is growing, or it's going to be growing. It sounds like there's all kinds of great things happening. So I know that you've been working on something for people who want to get involved. Maybe they're partially involved in the industry, but they want to upskill or improve their skills, or maybe they're brand new. Can you talk a little bit about the micro-credentials that you've been working on?
I convinced a CTLI here, and I think they had a little minimum, let's try one of these micro-credentials, and we did it. And Nick and I sat down and said, okay, if we were to break this down, what do the topics look like? If we had to open up aquaponics into specific topics, what would we do? And we came up with these 10, and I think they're really good. And so it started about almost 3 years ago now that we started these micro-credentials. And they were meant for industry, because we had industry partners coming to us and say, okay, so let's say I get into this aquaponics that you say is so great. Then what? Where do I find aquaponics people? And we kind of look at each other and it's like, yeah, they're not just coming out of the college, or we've had some of our students go to places, but, you know, and I said, yeah, you might be able to hire a greenhouse person, but they have no fish experience, or a fish person with no greenhouse experience. And even then, having the two together, you still have to have that ecological approach. And we've learned along the way too, to have that ecological approach. So you have to get familiar with it. And so these courses were meant for that, so people can pick and choose where they wanted to boost their understanding and training in. And it was also laying down the framework for training. So we were all about research. We had some teaching, and the micro-credentials were part of that teaching. We also have been doing, for about 5 years now, consulting. So we can help individuals just on an hourly kind of rate get their aquaponic system going or whatever. So aquaculture. And the last part was the training part. So I was conceiving that and saying, okay, so who's coming to us for this training? Is it someone who knows nothing about fish? Or, and I thought, no, they need to know something before they get in. So what is the standard going to be? These micro-credentials are the standard. So if someone comes to us and say, yeah, I want you guys to train us, then I'll say, okay, take these three or four micro-credentials before we'll start training you on fish. So they have that fundamental, what is a biofilter? What does it do? The water chemistry, how to feed fish, like the fundamentals of, so they can understand why we're doing the training. And that also was part of why we did micro-credentials. So, and we wanted something that anyone anywhere can take around the world. It's all online. So they just go in, they could, yeah, I want that. And each one is about 8 to 10 hours of online content. They can do it on their own time. There is a quiz at the end, but they can decide not to take it or take it. It's up to them. If they want the badge for that micro-credential that they can, if they want to use it for, you know, boosting their resume or whatever, I would suggest take that course and get the badge. Then you can prove you've taken it and understand the material. But, you know, and the good thing about it too is these micro-credentials, the Aquaponics Association in the U.S., which is the biggest aquaponics association in the world, is basically came to us and said, we want to use these micro-credentials and offer them to our membership. And so now we have a relationship with them where they're offering the micro-credentials. And if you're a member, you get 10% off. If you're an Aquaponics Association member, you get 10% off these. So they're advertising these micro-credentials for us. And in turn, their membership gets a break too. So it's working out really well. We're advertising each other and they really liked them. We had to show them the micro-credentials and what they were. And they were quite impressed with what they saw on those. So yeah.
That's really fantastic. And we'll include a link in the show notes so that if anyone's looking for them, they know where to go to sign up for them.
Yeah.
I would like to mention this another side of micro-credentials, because that's an opportunity for us to really deliver this message about new approaches to sustainable food production. Like John mentioned, we didn't come to realization of this ecosystem approach right from the start. And fish biologists, they consider aquaponics as part of aquaculture, with kind of aquaculture with plants as a kind of biofilter. Greenhouse people, they considered aquaponics as a type of hydroponics and with synthetic fertilizer replaced with fish water as their nutrients. What we realized over time, that it's a different paradigm. It's a different approach to food production where we can recycle all nutrients within the system. Why we call it ecosystem? Because it's mimicked from natural ecosystem. In nature, nothing gets wasted. Everything is going to be utilized and recycled back to continue this life cycle. That's how our biosphere has been developing during eons of times. So what we are doing, we are borrowing the same mechanisms which already exist for the purpose of food production. And in those micro-credentials, we are sharing this vision of sustainable food production. I think it's very, very important for people to understand the difference. Changing paradigm is not easy process. It's, as a matter of fact, it's quite painful. And probably it will take generations in order to realize that we should change our methods, our approaches to food production. But we have to start sometime. So I consider this as a start. And it's really, from my perspective, from my point of view, it's very, very important, even from point of view of survival of humanity on this planet in future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like we've got a great start here, and there's such incredible work being done. So if anyone listening is a fan of aquaponics and the Aquaculture Center, like I am and like our producer Jordana is, where can they follow along? How can they follow along on the research projects?
So you can go on the Lethbridge College webpage and look under CARI, so the Center for Applied Research, Innovation, and Entrepreneurship. That's where our center runs out of. There is a client form. So if we get people emailing Nick, and we have past connections or with the people out there, and they say, hey, I want to do this. And so we have a process in place where people fill out a client form. And once that client form is submitted, then we can actually get the administrative gears in play to actually engage with this client. And in that form, it says, okay, what are they looking for? Are they looking for a solution, or do they have an idea? What is it? And then usually we can help them. And if not, we can guide them to where they can get the help they need. That's for a consultation. From the research standpoint, sometimes that leads to research as well. They have an idea and they want to go somewhere. They need some assistance on the aquaponics or aquaculture side. And then we can work with them on how to get funding. They're now a partner. And, you know, that leads to further research down the road. We've limited where we've gone with our research. Before, it's a constant struggle not to, oh, here's an idea. And you're kind of pulled off track. We've kind of had to refocus a number of times, saying, this is what we do, this is what we're good at. And if it goes beyond that, sometimes it's still enticing. And we still, out of our own curiosity, right, Nick, we oh, that would be interesting to do, John, right? Or I say the same thing to Nick. But we have to make sure that it's in our wheelhouse kind of thing before we take that on. But that's basically the process. And some of the partners we have from past research projects or past consultations continue to be longstanding project partners with us going forward. So
great. Well, yeah. Thank you very much. Before we wrap up, can I put a plug in for the fertilizer that you guys sell, the liquid, special liquid fertilizer, where people can get it and where it comes from?
Well, yeah. So basically our liquid fertilizer from the bioreactors that we have, we can produce about 50 liters a day at our facility. And the bioreactor creates this concentrated fertilizer that basically, if you compare it to other fish fertilizers, there's some of you might be well acquainted with fish fertilizers, and some might not like them because of the way they smell. Ours has no smell. So it's produced differently than other fish fertilizers. And it's these bioreactors that Nick has been working on for so long and that we've further developed here, the whole mandate is, these are not little sewage treatment tanks. These are designed and meant to retain and concentrate the nutrients. We don't want to get rid of them or expel them or gas them off. We want to retain them because in the end, we want a high quality fertilizer product. So this fertilizer, this fish fertilizer, you can dilute it 50 times. You know, if you look at places like Canadian Tire, a liter of this goes for about $10. So, you know, if we're producing 50 liters, $500 a day just off the waste, right? So it can be quite valuable. I understand that once you flood the market with this stuff, the price comes down. So, but It's a fantastic product.
So people can buy it at the Lethbridge College Bookstore. And yeah. I believe Granary Road near Calgary.
Granary Road sells it as well. So Granary Road's just south of Calgary. It's kind of like an agriculture amusement park, I call it. But yeah, so that's a partner of ours. That's with the, they're selling it there and we sell it at the bookstore here.
Yep. Great. Well, thank you very much. Thank you so much to both of you for coming on the podcast today. It's been absolutely fascinating. I just think it's so incredible that everyone should know about the great work that you guys are doing there. So, thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks.
This episode featured Donna McLaughlin as host and John Dirksen and Nick Savadoff as guests. Jordana Gagnon was our producer. Ryan Robinson was our sound technician and editor. Our podcast is funded by Lethbridge College's Center for Teaching, Learning, and Innovation and recorded on the traditional lands of the Blackfoot Confederacy. For more episodes, head to our website, learninginnovation.ca. Thanks for listening and take care.